So first, I'd like to just acknowledge that actually in Thailand today and Southeast Asia, it's a day ahead. So it is actually the full moon of Wesak, which is probably the greatest really Buddhist. Yeah, I can call it a celebration, which the Sangha and the monastic communities come and great homage to the lineage and the practice and the thousands of years that have, through people's dedication, have awakened. You know, so I just want to honor that, and in honoring that, I thought a little piece of this is that used to be up in Nevada City where I came. There was a monk, Usilananda, that used to come and to teach 10-day retreats out in the forest with a bunch of mosquitoes, and it was always a challenge in the Sierras. But he always started out by just starting with the practice before the precepts, before anything. He would start with forgiveness. And I was thinking of, oh, well, this is a marker in time and of the year. And, you know, we all, in some ways, have harmed ourselves or harmed others or been harmed by others. So I'd like to just start with, in a way, it's just to, in essence, to kind of, it is simply about releasing the past. So I'd like to offer that as a kind of beginning to this talk and this Wesak, which really for us is also, the full moon is actually sometime late tonight and tomorrow. So you can just repeat after me. If there is any way that I may have harmed myself, I ask forgiveness. If there is any way I may have been harmed by another, I extend forgiveness. If there is anyone who may have harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I extend forgiveness. So it's just a way to acknowledge that you know, harm happens, and sometimes without, we talked about intention, wise intention, and sometimes it happens, it's so complex that harm is done to us, or we have harmed others, or more principally, we have harmed ourselves, you know, and that there has to be an acknowledgement that it is the past. And sometimes when we sit here, we can be sometimes plagued by the past, as when nothing's happening, old stories, old wounds come up, which truly affect us, you know. And the prospect here in the practice is that just simply through, sitting still, that all things, when they have a bit of charge on them, seem to bubble up if you haven't noticed, you know. And so in doing that, there is the fundamentals of these practices of letting go. So I will start, and again, this whole idea of, the first part of this wise intention or wise thought was about the fact that there's unskillfulness in desire and in anger, and so we find a way to renounce some of the complexities that hold ourselves or others in captivity. And yesterday, Gil kind of explored the ideas of metta and compassion, which I would like to extend, since the third one is really about kindness. And how do we, through our wise thought and wise intention, that we elicit and we bring kindness into our world. You know, this is a fundamental of, I think, when we get soft enough with these practices, you know, when really there are moments where nothing is happening, that the mind and the heart come together. And when they come together, they have an incredible, you could say, insight and an incredible softening that fortunately releases the past and the future. So I have one of my poems I thought you're going to have to wade through. So it's about full moon and metta. Oh, you thought I could talk about the heart, the subtle way the armor shifts, the many layers that hold it in place and cover it with trance, or the ice that chills the fear and freezes the heart. At night, even the light through the window shades asks the moon to come and press its face against me. Yes, breathing into me, closing the dream world, eyes open, 3 a.m., shutting off the world of words. Eyes open, 3 a.m., shutting off the world of words. A soundless shadow of the heart, knowing, like a bird nesting, would gather all of our flaws, all of our flaws in celebration. Could it be uncovering another layer, breath wedded to both body and mind, seemingly uncomplicated and unfabricated, that this small movement, this small shift allows the heart, freed from its trance, to shine like the moon, undiluted by the window shades of our mental wanderings, to merge with it perfectly, impossibly, to open and close this sure heart's release, this sure heart's release, a promise given by the awakened one thousands of years ago. It's interesting that this idea of opening the heart, and what's kind of difficult with it is that it seems to be a reflection or the consequence a lot of times of a broken heart, that somehow in our lives different situations have come along and kind of what captured us. And in that capturing, we've gotten confused, and in the confusion, we have suffered. And in that suffering, there has the possibility, I should say, is that there is an opening. That suddenly we're so concerned with ourselves and maybe the pain we feel or the pain that has come to us, that we can't hold it, you know. And ultimately, when we can't hold it, then the heart breaks. It opens. And it has then, maybe just for a moment, it begins to recognize the truth that all hearts beat. And they all beat the same. There is ultimately no separation. And unfortunately, sometimes it has to come this way. Simply because we are so tough. You know, we are... So much we live in our heads, you know. And a lot of these practices are, oh, can I just start at least including my body as a piece, you know. But ultimately, the mind is not separate from the heart. And yet, it appears to be that way, you know. I kind of love this word metta. You know, we keep using the word metta, but we also in our language, we have a word love. But love is so complicated. It has so many cultural and historical complexities that it is actually confuses us, you know. So I thought I would, the clearest thing I've been reading over all these years came from Stephen Levine, and who passed away recently. And it's from Who Dies, but to me, it sort of gave me the whole picture without having to, he did a better description than I could do. We use the word love, but we have no more understanding of love than we do of anger or fear or jealousy or even joy, because we seldom investigate what the state of mind is. What are feelings we so quickly label as love? For many, what is called love is not lovely at all, but is a tangle of needs and desires, of momentary ecstasies and bewilderment. Moments of unity, of intense feelings of closeness, occur in a mind so fragile that the least squint or sideways glance shatters its oneness in a dozen ghostly paranoias. When we say love, we usually mean some emotion, some deep feeling for an object or a person that momentarily allows us to open to another. But in such emotional love, self-protection is never very far away. Still, there is, quote, business to the relationship, clouds of jealousy, possessiveness, guilt, intentional and unintentional manipulation, separateness, and the shadow of all, quote, previous loves darken the light of oneness. But what I mean by love is not an emotion, and this is really the description of metta, is not an emotion, but a state of being. True love has no object. Many speak of their unconditional love for another. Unconditional love is the experience of being. There is no I and other, and anyone or anything it touches is experienced in love. You cannot unconditionally love someone. You can only be unconditional love. It is not a dualistic emotion. It is a sense of oneness with all that is. The experience of love arises when we surrender our separateness, into the universal. It is a feeling of unity. You don't love another. You are another. There is no fear because there is no separation. You know. So it's one of the best descriptions I know, because we use the conventional word, and even though it somewhat parallels some of the stuff that goes on. You know, metta is not, you know, it is so much bigger than any kind of relational complexity or duality, because it is non-dual. It is simply when that purity of feeling is there, then it includes not only all beings, but it also there's the plants and the animals and the trees, and so the whole known world to us then is experienced as something that is not separate, you know. So it's really this truth of allowing that non-separateness to be actually an awareness itself, you know. You know, I spent many years somewhat confused about this, thinking that, oh, if I could just radiate love, that would be good enough, right? You know, somehow if I just could radiate it. But I pretty soon got to see that that was John wanting to do something, you know, and ultimately I found that metta was not doing something. It was actually being something, and that it was something about taking responsibility of owning. And what to own? First of all, owning of this body. You know, I'm so delighted, you know, and I've had cancer, and I've had broken bones, and I've had all sorts of things. And oh, I took a medication in Ladakh a couple years ago where I go for a retreat, or did go to retreat, and all my muscles ached, you know, the whole time, you know, and I couldn't sit like this. I had to sit in a chair, you know. And I resisted thinking, oh, you know, I can't do this anymore, you know. But in reality, for all the difficulties, you know, eventually I got changed with medication, and that kind of pain, that constant pain, kind of went away. And my body hadn't abandoned me. It simply was caught for a period of time, you know. And I did suffer. And when it was gone, I was just relieved. But then I also saw, again, it taught me something again. And it taught me about the possibility, this possibility of, you know, this can be a hell realm. And this can also be a heaven realm, you know. And a lot of it is, yes, you can get caught with the body, but ultimately when it's not hindering you and you can use it properly, then it becomes a vehicle that gives permission, you know. It has to have a backlog, I think, but we've all suffered. You've all suffered, you know. You wouldn't be here, by the way, if you had not, you know. So you have that backlog. But it was always somehow about I and me and mine, you know? And metta is not about that. Metta is simply the capacity to break down the dualism, to actually see with different eyes, you know. I like this word awareness, you know. It's interesting, there is the one of my kind of dearest quotes that I carry with me is from the Bidiwala of Bombay, Sri Nisargadatta. And, you know, I kind of all the time I say it to myself, you know, wisdom tells me I'm nothing, and love tells me I'm everything. And somewhere between the two, my life flows. Wisdom tells me I'm nothing. Love tells me I'm everything. Somewhere between the two, my life flows. So you will play between the two, you know. And sometimes, because of intention and thought, you will have to monitor your actions and recognize the, you know, sometimes the word renunciation is such a, kind of loaded word in some way, but I like the word simplify, the power to simplify, to put down, you know, and that out of that simplification and a sense of connection and a little deeper listening, what the practice we do, when that is there, you know, and it ultimately says that all that I have built up, you know, in some ways, it's kind of dangerous, you know, more images, in some ways. You know, some corruption of who we think we are, you know. Because ultimately, you know, you aren't who you think you are. You know, and whatever you think you are is constantly, it's changing with every experience that you come across, you know, and we have this, really it is kind of a delusion that there's a solid thing that's moving, that, you know, I'm John, I am a neurotic, I have these wounds from the past that make me like I am. You know, and what this is saying is, no, I am actually just a changing phenomena that certainly has power from the past, but it is not who I am, you know. And I think when you start letting go of that who I am, then there's a possibility of recognizing that you're actually something greater, something more, something that sees that it's, and this is a funny thing to say, it's not this and that, it's not two things. You aren't, and it isn't. There is singly just the awareness itself that can know itself, you know? And if that awareness is there, it actually mimics and kind of supports the truth of the non-separateness, you know? And if the non-separateness is there, then that sense of kindness and non-harming is actually a natural or truthful phenomena that happens. You wouldn't harm anyone else, you know. I'll read to you another little, this is a piece, a little poem, really about this thing of mind and heart. It's from, it's also, I, two pieces from Stephen, and really wonderful. Used to live down in Santa Cruz here, down the hill, and that's where I first met him. And it's a marvelous, marvelous person. It's called Meditation Blues. Sometimes it breaks my heart to watch my mind. Sometimes it breaks my heart to watch my mind. Cold self-interest, insistent fear and judgment, whispering insults, vengeful fantasies, triumph and despair. A condition unfolding, so impersonal, a condition unfolding, so impersonal, that we take it personally. You got that? It's kind of a big piece there. Sometimes aghast at the casual cruelty of even minor fears and celebrations. Sometimes it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart to watch my mind. You know, I think you've been telling yourself a few stories. You know, you get it. And sometimes it stays broken long enough to touch even this pain with love. Sometimes the mercy washes, even Mrs. Macbeth's hands, turns tragedy to grace. Turns tragedy to grace and makes it all worthwhile. Sometimes it breaks my mind to watch my heart. You know. I was going to say, after almost 50 years of this, I'm still learning, you know. With all the kind of little fears and desires and but you know, it's kind of like those dolls that have the weights on the bottom and you kind of hit them and life kind of knocks it over. And you know, this practice has been like putting more and more pebbles in the bottom of it and it comes back up. You know, and you begin to trust more and more that even if you're really knocked over, and life is going to knock you over, you know, your nature is to grow old. You know, you cannot stop that. Your nature is to become ill. You cannot stop it. Your nature is to die. And everything that you love and cherish will be taken from you. Your only possession are your actions. I love that. Your only possessions are your actions. It's very good for the Westerner, you know, since we're so, God, I think sometimes, and you know, if I could sweep my house out of all the junk I've collected, you know, and just the closets and the clothes and how did it happen? You know, how did all this stuff get piled up? You know, and especially since I'm supposed to be a good Buddhist, you know, but also a squirrel, you know, And I hope you're not like that, you know. You're not a messy squirrel at that, you know. But there are possibilities here, you know. And I hope that, you know, the practice we're hard. We're really hard on ourselves, you know. And even coming here, you know, you kind of got two breaths and you took off, and then there's kind of this, what am I doing here, you know? And there's kind of that old what grade school teacher kind of coming up and talking to you, you know, and you know, it's okay, you know, it's really okay, you know, because I think more and more that sitting here is really the intention of kindness, you know, and bringing really these thoughts of, I'm okay, it's okay, you know, I don't have to be somebody else, I am what I am and who I am, which is a little messy, you know. But if it wasn't for the messiness, I think the messiness is the thing that really accentuates or gives the metta, that universal openness, that universal fearlessness, its own way. So I think that's good for today, you know? You got it, you know? If you don't get it, you'll keep coming back, you know? And even if you get it, you'll keep coming back because, you know, I'm still doing it. I'm still coming back, you know? It's an interesting long road, you know? But there's some pretty big promises here. So, I'll read this. Full moon, metta. You thought I could talk about the heart, the subtle way the armor shifts, the many layers that hold it in place and cover it with trance, or the ice that chills the fear and freezes the heart. At night, even the light through the window shades asks the moon to come and press its face against mine. Yes, breathing into me, closing the dream door, eyes open, 3 a.m., shutting off the world of words, shutting off the world of words. A soundless shadow of the heart, knowing, like a bird nesting, would gather all of our flaws in celebration. Gather all of our flaws in celebration. Could it be uncovering another layer, breath wedded to both body and this mind? Seemingly uncomplicated and unfabricated, that this small movement, the smallest shift, allows heart freed from its trance, heart freed from its trance, to shine like the moon, undiluted by the window shades of all these mental wanderings, to merge with it perfectly, impossibly, it opens and closes. This sure heart's release, this sure heart's release. A promise given by the awakened one thousands of years ago. So let's just sit for a moment. may the energetics of this period here, it's usually a full moon time, may it bring first just insight and the capacity to be not afraid and let your heart open to all things.